Welcome to the first episode of Toad's Country. We're filming this thing, man.
We are.
Dude, my first guest is the one and only Sam Groh.
Hell yeah.
Welcome to Toad's Country, dude.
Dude, thanks for having me.
You're back in Vegas again.
I am.
And you're getting punished.
By gambling?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Dude, I would say that we spent some time
this
weekend.
This is where you use your own line, and Vegas didn't get this pretty from winners.
That's right, man. Yeah. This place isn't beautiful because you win.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I'm saying. You're getting punished. But you had a good trip.
Oh, yeah. I'm still having it.
So far, so good. You don't leave till Thursday.
Right.
Heading up to Fresno, some more shows.
That's right.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah. I've played Fresno one other time. It was awesome town, really good people. And then we're going to Folsom after that, and I've never been there. So,
dude, Folsom got some history.
Yeah, it does.
How long is this run?
It's started top of January and goes through the end of March.
Just you and Tinley?
Mm-hmm.
You going to come back out full band before the end of the year?
Yeah, we're getting dates booked now in the summer.
That's the goal?
Yeah, well, me and Alex, we work hard in the fourth and first quarter doing the acoustic thing. So then we take a little bit of a downtime and then jump back out on the bus with the band in the summer and then take a break before our next run.
Did you do all this before COVID, the acoustic stuff, and then going into full band? You think COVID kicked that off
for
you?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about how that all came to fruition, man, because a lot of people don't know about your hustle.
Yeah.
They really don't. I'm prideful to know you because of it. I believe that we talked just the other night. That was your first show in Vegas at Stoney's was an acoustic show.
That's right.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
For you and your friends.
Yeah.
But that was because you were cool enough to go. And that was during our Backyards and Bonfires. And
right.
Like, it's not Backyards and Bonfires, but I want you to come out to Stoney's and play for me and my friends. I don't know if anybody else is allowed to come.
Right.
Maybe they're not. Maybe they can. But whatever. Worst case scenario, it'll be just me and my friends.
Right. And it was some did. So that's kind of what started this whole thing with you continuing on. I guess, obviously, there's success in there, and that's why you keep doing it.
Yeah. It's a cooler experience for me, I think, because – when you do the full band thing, you know, it's like most of the jig is you go from song to song to song, keep the energy up, speak very little. It's all about the show.
Right.
Whereas with the acoustic, you know, breakdown, I can do whatever I want. I can tell every story about every song if I want to. If something happens in the audience that's funny, I can talk about it. You
right.
know, like there's no rules.
Off the cuff.
Yeah. It's an evening, and that they call it, you know, an evening with kind of thing. And it does. It just feels like you get to sit down and play songs for people who dig them, but you also get to, like, talk as much as they want to talk.
Well, you get to tell a story where the songs came from. 9 times out of 10 in Vegas, I don't think that's a hit because people want to come in and see the music. And I'm one of those guys that says if I wanted to listen to you talk, I'd go listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
Except in this environment. And I think Saturday night you did that at Stoney's North 40. It was pretty well received, I would say.
Yeah.
People really got into it, and you had fun with the crowd, and you got people engaged, which was really neat. I want to say that was the first time we'd done something like that before, where we told these people you were coming. We did a show earlier with Love and Theft, but it wasn't the same buildup to it all. I think it was a little bit different. This one felt kind of cool and different and almost like something you would see in Nashville at, like, the Listening Room or, you know. I dug it. I think.
Yeah, me too, man. It's an awesome room. And honestly, It still turns out, even with the vibe with the dance floor and all that, it still turns out to be just a really, you know, cool room to play in. I mean, it's already circle. So
yeah,
it kind of makes the attention kind of go to the stage where people want to sit. And that's what I love the most about it is when I looked at all the tables, everyone was locked in.
Yep.
Everybody was watching the show. Like, and the people wanted to dance. That was kind of cool for me, too. It was like,
it's kind of weird to see an acoustic.
I don't get to see people dance at my acoustic shows.
No,
you know,
that whole back the whole back when people would, they would, our go-go girls would just like pick it up and they would go right for it. I thought that was pretty neat.
It was
too.
Fun. Yeah, I liked it.
Definitely different. That happens full band show all the time. But
yeah.
I would have to say that I don't think that happened during any of the last ones that we did. The other thing I was going to say was it's almost like the Bluebird Cafe as well. That's what I thought was neat. People were sitting, engaged, paying attention, listening to your stories. I love throwing Danielle under the bus and making her come up and tell how we met. You got married, dude. Out of the blue, Brad shows up, one of your last shows at Stoney's, and says that your fiance's coming.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about it. That was news to, I think, the world, most people in the world, I would say. You're married, got a kid on the way.
Yeah.
Dude, life has changed for you. That all happened pretty much in 23?
Yeah. 22, 23,
just 23.
Yeah, well, married in 22.
Married in 22?
Yeah, and then...
Goddamn, last year went by fast.
Yeah, got pregnant in 23.
When'd she do? He do?
May.
Boy, girl?
Boy.
Boy. Got a name?
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name's gonna be James Roman, and we're gonna call him JR. My dad was JR, so he's the last grow.
The last grow?
Yeah, so I wanted to give my dad a little more homage. And
that's pretty badass, man. I love the way you talk about your dad. I was blessed enough to get to go to the Opry for your Opry debut.
Yeah.
I sat next to your family, your daughter. Took everything I had not to cry, like, honestly, because the emotions were thick that night.
Yeah.
But you talk about this story about how your dad, you guys drove by the Opry. Let's talk about that again. You say it in your own words, because obviously it means a lot more coming from you.
Yeah, first time I went to Nashville, I was 14 years old. My dad had a conference he had to go to, and he brought me with him. And in between his meetings or whatever, we would go and explore. And the first place that he took me was the Grand Ole Opry. He drove me by it, and he was like, you know, boy, there's a lot of country singers that come into town. And he's like, but none of them count until they play that place right there. And it stuck with me forever. The Opry will always, I mean, it's such a sacred place anyway, but it always holds a little extra special for me because it was something that my dad thought was cool. And I thought that if I could ever get there and play, my dad would think I was cool. So
Right. Now
I know he's watching from heaven and thinking that's pretty cool.
Dude, he got to see that night, man. He touched a lot of people that night, for reals.
Yeah.
You did your words, but I think he was present. I felt him. That's for sure. I never met your dad, but I definitely felt him. Let's go back to marriage, man. Kind of a game changer for you. You kind of probably want to stay home a little bit more.
Yeah, it's not kind of a game changer, man. My wife, I feel like there's a lot of dudes that say it, but I really mean it. My wife saved my life. She changed my life and saved my life.
Right.
And it's been the coolest experience to have someone love you the way that she loves me. And I've realized, you know, music was always my first everything for a really long time, and something that I chased. And any person that I ever dated or whatever, there was never a chance that they could help pull me or want to pull me in a different direction or want me to slow down on anything until I met my wife. And so it's been a cool thing for me to be in this part of my career where I can kind of put out records and take time. And I have a really good manager that sets, you know, make sure that if I'm out for 3 months, I get to be home for two.
Right.
And I've never had anybody in that part of my life either. God just really came in and honestly made a lot of changes. But my wife was a missing piece for a long time.
That's pretty neat, man. Gives everybody hope out there, because you've been through some stuff.
Oh, God. Yeah, I tell everybody, I am the least person that deserves to have happiness or...
Oh, that's not true.
No, it's true, man. I've not always been the greatest. For sure, I've not been the greatest when it comes to relationships or love, and it was grace from God himself that allowed me to have this relationship. And I'm telling you, if God thinks I'm worthy of it, you definitely are, for sure.
Heck yeah. Let's have some fun. She slid into your DMs?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, she did. And so it was during a time after I'd gotten out of a breakup, so there was a lot of, like, heart eye emojis and stuff in my DMs. I'm not going to lie to you. But she sent...
He means by a lot, like, there were six. That's
yeah,
it. That's
at
it.
Least five. But, no, she slid in the midst, and she said, you know, hey, I just want to let you know that I know you're going through a hard time, and God told me to pray for you, so I've been praying for you. And it struck me, man, in a time where, you know, my relationship, faith, and all that was probably not in the greatest of spaces.
In question.
Yeah, and... she, you know, me and her started talking back and forth, and she lived in South Jersey, and I live in Manchester, Tennessee. So
pretty close.
Yeah. So after talking for a while, we decided we wanted to go on some dates. So she would drive, and this was her idea. She would want to drive halfway. She said, you know, if I'm worth driving to, then you're worth driving to. So we'd meet in Roanoke, Virginia, and we'd have dates and hang out.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. And I knew from the moment I kissed her, she was my wife. Yeah, I bought the ring within 30 days of kissing her for the first time.
That's pretty crazy. And you told me a story, something about how your daughter reacted to stuff and her daughter reacted to stuff. I remember this conversation about someone in your family, mom, dad, grandma, or something like that, where she felt like she...
Yeah, I got... So my wife has... a now 4-year-old, about to be 5-year-old, April. City Ray, and she's my bonus kid. And you know, I've never been in a situation where I've been, you know, in a spot to be a stepfather or a bonus dad. So it was different for me. But City Ray is super like intuitive, and my mom just had this urge to want to meet Kelsey and City pretty quickly.
Right.
And
she probably felt it too.
Yeah, maybe. And so she did. And the first day that City Ray met my mom, she maybe within like 2 or 3 minutes, she looked at my mom and said, "Okay, Grammy, are we going to have dinner tonight?" And she doesn't have a Grammy.
Right.
So there was no other person prior that she could have like come up with that name. She just instantly knew that my mom was her Grammy.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. And then same thing with Emery Harlow. Within the first 10 or 15 minutes, she hugged Emery and she said, I love you, Emery Harlow. So it's
pretty badass.
Yeah,
man.
Dude. It's awesome.
It's almost like it all happened for
you. It was supposed to happen the way that it did, for sure.
You went through everything to realize that this was the best.
Yeah.
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 I think we all go through that at some point in our lives.
Yeah, and I joke with her all the time because there was moments in there that she probably could have met me or we could have gotten together sooner, and boy, would it have saved me some time and trouble. But her and Brad, my manager, both say that the timing when it happened was the right timing. If it had happened earlier, then I would have never been able to fully appreciate what I have.
I think you have to go through a lot to get to that, to really realize what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I met some people you were with before. And it's just like, not that they were bad people. They probably just, I mean, I didn't get to see the ins and outs, nor would I want to, but that's your personal life. And that's where you go back into that thing and go, I went through all of this to realize all of this to get to this.
Yeah.
And I think that's an awesome thing.
Even my wife would agree. We both know and understand, in us having the relationship that we have, that any prior relationships that we had before us was incorrect. So both me and her have the hope that anybody that we ever dated, you know, before us getting together, can go and find exactly what we have.
Yeah.
So if any one of those combinations would have hung in there too long, or hung in there for, you know, the not wanting to break up or whatever, it would have never freed either one of us up to have the relationship that we have. It's a cool thing, you know. I want everybody to feel it.
How has that changed you in a writing person? Like your personality when it comes to writing, has it completely changed your mindset and your drive and your...
Well, now it's funny. I used to write songs from the real place of the real breakups and the real drinking moments and all that. And now when I'm in a writing room, my muse is me imagining if my wife and I broke up. Or so if I'm writing something sad, I'll think about that.
Dang.
Which honestly puts me in a deeper emotional writing space. And then, you know, if there's happy or love, obviously I have a really good basis to draw from now.
Right.
Whereas before, that was all fluff, man.
I mean, I think it was somewhat real, but for the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. A guesstimate. Zillow has zestimates.
We got music has guesstimates.
Guesstimates.
What a great analogy, dude. Yeah. Like, listen, I can write songs, but they weren't really it.
Yeah.
Like, if you really put them on sale, it's only worth this much.
Yeah. 0.0031 cents.
We're not talking about how much you make a stream. Oh, that's the same number.
That's right.
We talked earlier about jumping into this. You've got this song called Song About You that you cut.
Yeah.
Changed a lot for you.
Yeah.
It blew up. How many total streams does that song have?
Geez. It crossed 32 million on Spotify, and I think it's got over 20 million or 25 million. It's probably at like 60, 65 million streams.
You ever think that song would do that?
No. No. That's... I remember when Brad called me first week and said, "You've done 65,000 streams this week, buddy." And now. Well,
that's a lot.
Yeah. It was, yeah, but in 7 days, whereas comparison when that song now, I mean, even now it gets, you know, 25, 30,000 streams a day.
It's so crazy. Yeah. So we have a mutual buddy. His name is Nate Smith. He's got this number one song on a country radio right now. And this is my second time that I've got to sit with him and just kind of like pick his brain and tell him I'm team cut the damn song.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of neat. So you folks out there, Nate Smith's got the number one song right now with World on Fire and Country Airplay Radio. He's thinking about cutting song about you.
Yeah, and ironically, songwriter on World on Fire is the songwriter that's on Song About You.
Dude, so how stoked would you be if he were to cut it and it goes number one?
Oh, man, beyond stoked. I mean, I think it would be awesome. And the best part about it is Nate is so nice. And his whole thing with Taylor Phillips, who wrote the song, he was like, he heard my version of it and liked my version of it. And then Taylor had flown him another version of it. And he was like, resend me Sam's version.
That's perfect.
Of it. So it's a compliment on all boards. And plus, you know, streaming does not pay what radio pays. Right. So I think it would be amazing to see Joey and Kenton and Taylor get, you know, radio royalties on the song.
But my understanding is that you'd get some of that as well.
I would, just because Kenton and Joey and Taylor are really nice people.
Yeah, I think that's kind of neat, though, but that's the brotherly love in this genre of music.
Yeah, yeah, really, well, is. I mean, me and Taylor are ride or dies anyway. Yeah. Like, music, not music, whether he was doing it or I wasn't doing it or whatever, if he was in a ditch, I'd go get him and vice versa, so...
Pretty badass. I was with Nate Friday, and he said that that's one of those songs he feels that didn't get everything it needed to get out of it. He loves it that much, and that's an attest to what you did with the single, because for him to go back to it versus the demo that came out on it, I just think, to me, that's just like probably one of the neatest things in the world.
Oh, man, it'd be super awesome to watch him take it and have him go and ring the bell.
I think, yeah, it'd be hella fun to see you two on the road. And speaking of stuff like that, is there an artist that you'd love to go out on the road with?
Learn from,
have some fun with?
So many. I'm always on reserve for Brooks and Dunn. Always.
So a little fun fact, whenever you come to Vegas and Brooks and Dunn are here, that's one of your stops.
Oh, yeah.
Without fail.
Yeah, dude, every time. And I buy the good seats, too. And I sit up there with all the other Reba fans and tell them that I'm glad they love Reba, but it's all about Brooks and Dunn over here, baby. But,
funny.
Yeah, no, I'm always on reserve for them. I'm a huge fan of Lee Bryce. I'd love to, you know, do something with him. And he's starting to do acoustic shows now, which is cool.
Right.
Randy Houser.
Dude, Brad and I talk about Randy Houser all the time. He's one of those dudes I could just sit back. I could sit on that couch and watch him play for 5 hours and not even get bored.
He is such an incredible singer. I've been lucky enough to play some shows with him. And all I did was stand on the side stage and just, like, take notes, man.
Right, in awe.
He's so good.
I think one of my favorite things about him when he does play live, he doesn't have a set list. He just wings it.
Yeah, honestly, watching him, Lee, and Garth does it a lot, too, goes off script and reads the room. I don't have a set list either, so yeah. I do the same thing. Like, it's cooler to take a show and breathe it off of a room than it is to – try to map them completely into something and make someone feel something that maybe the whole room's not vibing on.
Did you do that prior to all this, or after you saw someone like them play?
No,
you've always been that way?
I've been doing, well, I learned it from Garth and Lee and Randy.
Right, that's what I was going for.
Yeah. I learned it from them. Like, watching their videos, watching their shows. Eric Church does it too. Really, a lot of the really good live guys, they don't ever try to force a feeling in a room. They just try to cater to a feeling in the room. And watching them is what influenced me to try to do the same.
I wasn't a big fan of Eric Church until he did that ACM. I think it was during COVID when he did that song, Stick That in Your Country song, live.
Yeah.
It blew me away. I can watch that every day and not get sick of it.
Watching him, I was a kid, but he was on the Chief tour. And I went and watched him in an arena, sold out. You know, 15,000 people. And in the middle of the show, he has his band leave the stage, has one spotlight come down to him with his acoustic guitar and his double cup of Jack Daniels. And he sits out there and he has a few songs acoustic that he'll just knows he's going to play. And then he'll ask the crowd for three more.
Oh, wow.
And just like watching him own 15,000 people in one moment with one guitar, no extra nothing, was like the game-changing moment for me. I was like, God, man, like that. If you can aspire to be anything, that's amazing.
I've only seen him at like some ACM shows in person. I've never seen a full Eric Church song show. And I've been told something I got to see. I think you'd be badass to see at Red Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the shit.
Yeah. Dude, you should go check him out. He's unbelievable.
I think that would be probably, if he goes back and plays Red Rock, that'd probably be one of the things that I would go buy.
You'd like the show too, because it's got like the rock element to it. But man, he can take you on a journey. He's just got the greatest songs. Like, his songs,
he does.
So
I've always been a fan, but not like a super fan. I never really like dove deep into him till after I heard that, and then I just started going back and just playing everything he had on Spotify and just going through it and listening to it. And sometimes it takes stuff like that for me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a band that a friend of mine turned me on to years ago called Biffy Clyro, and the first time I listened to him, I was like, meh, I'm good. And then it turns out that their backup guitar player, secondary, what do they call him? Utility guitar player. He was in a band that I loved back in the day called Ocean Size.
Oh, wow.
I was a fan of him. So then I went back and listened to everything. Now I'm a super fan of them. But sometimes it takes stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at it.
Having something to relate.
Yeah. You and I were out on the Razor yesterday. I got to take him out. If you're from Vegas or no Vegas, we ended up at the Overlook over by the M. And then we took him out to the Magical Rocks. And then we went out to the Pioneer Saloon.
Hell yeah.
But our drive out there, we listened to a lot of emo stuff. Yeah. I wasn't quite sure if that was something you're gonna dive into, but you told me this little bit of a story that that's something that you always wanted to do when you first started in music, was to be in an emo band.
Yeah, dude, that was my first swing at everything. I loved like bands like The Used, yep, and Thrice and Newfound Glory, just like all that music was my kind of music. I dug it. And so I was just down to write the songs and be like the background singer.
Right.
And I formed like two or three different kinds of emo bands trying to make it work. And the band members always just like fell apart. And some of them would be like, man, it'd be so awesome if like this was our job, bro. And I'm like,
it no, should like, be. That's what we're going for.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be like that. And they'd be like, nah, you know, like it's probably never going to happen. And I'm like, oh no. Like, so I had to stop being in bands. And then finally, there was like this little booking agency that wanted me to go out and do some shows, and so I just started singing on the shows, and was like, well, if I gotta try to make it in music, I guess I wanna have to do it by myself.
Right.
And then the funny thing is when I went into the studio, I never had like an emo band voice or anything, but I made music in the studio to be like a rock record or emo-esque type, sure, melodies and things. And then there was a local radio station, 102.9 WKIK, that when I put that record out, they took the music from there and played it on the country station. Yeah.
That's what started it all?
And I remember talking to Frank Dawson, the guy who was running the station, and I was like, this is supposed to be on a different station. Like, why? He goes, bro, listen to your voice. You're country.
All right.
And I was like, no. And so
you fought it.
So I made another record, and then WKIK and 98.7 picked it up. So like more country stations kept picking up my music, and I was like, damn, I guess there's no way no escaping it. So I was like, well, I'll double down on it, learn more. And I mean, I've always loved country music. It's never been anything. I just, you know,
you just didn't think that was your avenue for it.
I didn't know that I was, yeah, I didn't know that it was that evident for me to do country music.
Well, having that passion for emo, they have all these emo nights in Nashville. You ever think about going out?
I already did one.
You did? Which one did you do?
I sang Good Charlotte, man.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah.
Which single?
Man, I can't remember now.
I'm guessing not the upbeat one.
Okay. Little Things.
Little Things, right?
Yeah, okay. So I did Little Things.
How'd that feel?
It was awesome.
That was a charity thing then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a whole bunch of good people, dude.
It's funny. I see a lot of them. My buddy Brian Russell Collins plays in a lot of those, and he wants to bring it to Vegas. And I'm like, it happens a lot here already. They have emo night like at the Brooklyn Bowl and everything like that. I don't know how Stonies would do, but like Stephen Wesley, he does a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, he like brings actual band members.
He
up,
does.
Which
he
is pretty dope, man. I saw that online. I was like, that's pretty
cool. It's pretty neat, yeah. Charlie Collin from Train, Michael Ward from The Wallflowers. I'm just going to... Kenny from Panic at the Disco. It's just really neat to see it because it's not just a cover band. It's actually these guys playing. But I sit back and think of just how well they do at the Brooklyn Bowl with them. But it's just a cover band. It's not like this. But Steven kills it when he does it, man. People super dig that. And it's fun because I get to watch him from being a country artist to doing something that he's super passionate about. And these relationships he comes up with are just amazing.
Yeah.
I think that these people that just come out, and we did the one at North 40, and Michael Ward from the Wallflowers called that one guy, Jacob Dylan, I think he was in some band called the Wallflowers. Oh, yeah, he was a singer of the Wallflowers. Bob Dylan's kid, right?
Yeah.
Shows up at Stoney's on 40 and gets up there and sings One Headlight. And
really?
Nobody knew what was going to happen. He just showed up. And I was like, holy
shit. Dude, that's
shit.
Awesome.
Yeah, I freaked, dude, because I literally walked up to him. I was like, dude, you want anything to drink like that? He's like, just a beer. I go, what kind? Like, tell me what you want. He goes, beer.
Any kind.
That's it. That's all he said was beer. I was like, okay, dude. Personality was on fire.
Crushing it.
Just crushed it. Then he got up there and sang, and I was like, this is like unheard of.
Yeah, that's
unheard
wild,
of.
Dude.
We've gotten some stuff at Stoney's that have been pretty cool. We had a couple guys come up. Gavin DeGraw's been on that stage, yeah, which is kind of neat.
I saw that.
Yeah, that was – I kind of like fussed that one out because they all knew I didn't drink. Gavin was like, within this group was, hey, man, if you do a shot, I'll go up on your stage and sing. And that's kind of like the pressures, dude, the pressure.
I mean, that's a good deal, though. I'd have done it.
Yeah, I almost drank the whole bottle. No, I didn't even drink that night because Matt was standing behind me, our sound guy. I'm like, dude, stand behind me. He goes, why? I go, just fucking stand behind me. Everyone's in the circle. They put up the toast. And he drank it, handed it right back, and he went up on stage, played like 7 or 8 songs. It was crazy. Because you think about,
so cool,
dude, that dude's huge. Billy Gibbons has played up there. Dustin Lynch showed up one night and played with one of the, Jake Rose's band was up there. He just kept the band. Yeah. And said, hey, you guys know this song, let's do this. He had a couple guys with him, so he kept the guitar player from Jake Rose's band. Jake Rose got up there and sang backup. But that kind of stuff is neat. I mean, I think for me, like one of the biggest was that Jacob Dylan is something that's unheard of. That guy's an icon in music.
Yeah, dude, that's badass.
I like to ask this question lately. It's super fun. If you take Mount Rushmore, you take those 4 guys that are on there, you can replace them with the people that got you into music today, like your icons in music. They don't have to be country.
Uh-huh.
Who would those 4 guys be?
Well, one would be my dad.
It's badass. It's
bad. Because he's the whole reason why I started playing and like kept at it. So my dad would be on there. Definitely Ronnie Dunn.
Brooks can kick it.
You know, I like kicks. He's got a couple. He's got.
You saw what I did there, right? Kicks. Go ahead.
Yeah, he can kick it. Then it's got Garth has got to be up there, and then I'll go with another. The other one would have to be my daughter because she again. I had her at a very young age. It was a fork in the road for me. Of do I go and try to just go get a secure job and lock it down and not chase my dreams?
Right.
Or do I, you know, take the other turn, put my head down, focus hard, try to make it happen, and then she can see that dreams can come true. And she was my biggest motivation.
It's beautiful.
In life, yeah.
That's beautiful. How's she doing these days?
She's good, man. She's awesome. She's going to be 16 in June, which is
trouble.
Absolutely wild. But... yeah, she's great. I love her so much. I honestly, I don't know how I created such a cool kid.
She got good genes, man.
Yeah,
she got good genes.
She is, and she's so smart and dedicated to everything that she does. Reads books. Like I was like, man.
Who are you?
I know. And it's the coolest thing to me to like watch her grow just because, you know, I don't know where she gets it from. It's all... heavenly magic, man.
It's not a horrible thing to fucking look back on, dude, if you really think about it. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Everything. Let's go to the rest of the year. You've got some new music coming out, right?
Yeah.
You keep dropping stuff.
I do. The reg, baby.
On the reg. Is that, I know that you're signed. You have a little bit of a deal. Do they have say-so on what you're dropping? Or is there kind of like a schedule of that stuff that's getting put out?
I have a cool relationship with my label where... if I hard pressed and said this is what I'm gonna put out, 99% of chance they would go, okay, cool.
Just like that.
Yeah. But I do ask for Forrest's opinion on everything that I do. He's the president over at Average Joe's, and you know, luckily we're pretty much on the same page.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, and Brad, my manager, hones in on what we cut to, so it's a 3-vote system. I'll send them all the songs. I'll have an idea of what I might want to cut. Then they put their 2 cents in ranking and what they like. And most of the time, they land pretty much on the same page.
That's not that's not the same for most.
No.
For sure.
No, it's...
I would say that's the biggest complaint I hear about when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Average Joe's is still a very much major independent label, but they very much have an independent mindset. They built that whole thing off of, you know, Brantley Gilbert and Colt Ford back in the day when they were playing like Mud Bogs and breaking the rules and doing that kind of stuff. So I have the freelance thinking over there that is nice, that makes it really easy for me to kind of, when I feel something or I want to put something out faster, or I want to do, they're pretty much 99% of the time on board with whatever I want
to
do.
You don't have to play the waiting game.
No, man.
Which is frustrating. Great. I like to tell this story. I had an artist come in with her radio rep, and they were talking about the single that was out. And she, the artist, I don't want to say any names, made mention of how when she goes and plays shows, the crowd sings this particular song all the time, top of their lungs. And I'm like, why don't you release that as a single then? Like, why isn't that the one? Aren't the people telling you what they want to hear? Like, I think that's a win.
Yeah.
You're out there on the road. Your fans are streaming your stuff, because I don't know how much people really listen to radio that much anymore. I know they really don't on the West Coast as much as maybe the Midwest or something like that. But when you look at the radio rep and she's just like sitting there going, no, like, you're not supposed to say that. But you know me, I say it anyway. I just figure that, hey man, if the world is telling you what they want to hear, why wouldn't you listen?
Well, that's the thing. That's the biggest disconnect with, I think, the industry as a whole most of the time, is you have some suit sitting in a building that's completely out of touch with what people are listening to or caring about.
Right.
Because he's more worried about the back end numbers or what he's going to be able to turn over. And he's also not a musically inclined kind of person, unless you're talking about a legend like, you know, Clive Davis or right. something like that. Like those guys, you know, Berry Gordy, they understood, you know, what people were liking and chased what people liked. But the problem is that they don't want to take the time to understand that someone in, you know, Kalamazoo, Michigan gives a shit when someone comes and plays this song.
Right.
You know, they only care about what they think and read.
And what, yeah, and I think it's old school mentality that just sucks, because you've got these new artists that are using these outlets, these social outlets like Instagram Reels and TikToks, and just putting it out there, and you're seeing that people respond. We were just talking about this earlier, that whole thing that Craig Campbell put out there. It just made me laugh, because it's so true that these TikTok kids get out there, which, man, God bless him. I guess without him, a lot of these artists wouldn't be around. But I'm not saying every one of them, but some of them. I mean, he put out there perfect. They never even played a show before, and they get a record deal.
Yeah.
And you got people out there. I mean, I understand that there's discrimination in age. I get it. I totally get it. But that doesn't mean it ain't worthy.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have friends that made it off of TikTok.
Yeah.
But and I'm happy for anybody who discovers any sort of, you know, success off of an app. But no matter how much a record exec or the opposite opinion being Craig Campbell, you know, push or don't push, it always falls on the artist.
Yeah.
So I don't ever get too tussled up about any of that, because you can see who takes a moment and takes advantage of it. And you can see who takes a moment and doesn't take advantage of it.
You know, I think the perfect example of that for me is I got to meet Trey Lewis.
Yeah, dude, I love him.
And there's a dude that came out of a social experiment.
Yeah.
In Dick Down in Dallas.
Yeah.
And so many people told him he wasn't going to be able to get out from underneath that song. And then he comes out with this banger and Always You. And I sit back and I listen to that and I'm like, I don't even know what Dick Down in Dallas is. I mean. Yeah.
Well, I mean, dude, part of that target audience was the ones that listened to Dick, heard Dick Down, and then decided to go, hey, let me go listen to some
a little bit
more.
Deeper, right?
I was that.
Yeah.
Like, so I went over there, and then I started listening to some of his old stuff, and that's how me and Trey, like, started talking to each other, because I found one of his old songs, and I was like, dude, this punches you in the face.
Yeah.
Like, this is great. And I was like, man, there's so many people coming over here. They're about to have a nice surprise. And then the industry took it as there's going to be some people over here looking for just more Dick Down in Dallas and not going to give it a chance of, you know, what else he can do or can't do as an artist, you know?
There's another artist out there. I forgot his name. He's similar to that vein of that song that people are asking me to bring out. And I'm like, I don't.
That's, oh, Dixon Dallas.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just like listen to some of his stuff and I sit back and I mean, you know me. I think Nate, when I was talking to Nate the other night, he said something to me that just really made me smile a lot on the inside. And he's like, you're an A&R for Vegas.
Yeah.
At Stoney's Rock and Country, because you care about music. You listen to it. And I like to say that at Stoney's, there's some hard tickets that are sold, but the rest of it is a walk-up, and I believe that there's just a trust that's been built that the artist is going to come through on Friday is going to give them what they paid for.
Yeah.
And I never looked at it that way.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And
yeah.
I never have.
It's cool. What you've built out here is an opportunity. I think all the greats that get involved with doing shows and building markets are the ones that see talent that they understand is talent and then want to put in the work to help that talent build a market.
Right.
And you've always been that way, which is such a rarity. I can tell you, I've played everywhere in this country, and it's more rare to find a promoter that snatched onto you because they truly believe into your music and want to help you build something than other ones that are just like, oh, you know, why aren't you selling any tickets?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Have you talked about the show?
You tell me why I'm not selling any. It's your market.
So there's, I've always felt since day one with you, you were taking way more of a risk on me than I was with you, but you always wanted to be my partner.
Absolutely.
In every aspect and every opportunity, which is such a rarity and something very special. You know, that's, I hope that the owners of B understand how special that is to have a mind and a relationship like yours in the building.
I appreciate those words. I look at it in that sense too, that my goal, I think we talked about it from day one, was to build the brand out of there like we did with Russell Dickerson. That was our blueprint. Dude played for 250 people his first show.
Yeah.
And built it up to his last total 7 shows. His last 2, he sold them out. He didn't play any other place here in Vegas but at Stoney's.
That's
and
awesome.
I think that is something that I've always prided myself on because we continue to do that and like teach people about new music. And that's what Country AF Radio was all about, was literally this ability to put music in front of people. Because we were building an audience, had a great audience. And then I had fun with some of your stuff with the Unreleased with Toad that Brad definitely didn't know about. But just being able to release music that wasn't coming out for a week or two or 3 months or I don't know. Don't tell Brad that. But the idea is like introducing people to new music, teaching them about it, getting them to dive deeper into it. You know, I walked into this studio today. They were listening to your stuff, and it just makes me happy that just even a little bit of a podcast like this, knowing that I've just introduced 2 more people to who you are. Yeah. And that's kind of like the goal of all of this is people want to know who you are after they like you.
Yeah.
But this is an opportunity for people to get to know you, dive a little bit deeper, get to know that you're a real person, because that's what I've always said is the hardest part about you guys is everybody thinks you fly into Vegas on a private jet, not in a truck with 2 dudes eating beef jerky and pulling over on the side of the road in Nebraska. I think it was Tinley.
Wyoming.
The biggest palm tree ever in Wyoming where Tinley was. But they just think you fly into town, do this show, hookers and blow, and then leave. But that's not even, you're still a real person. You're a family man. You got kids.
Yeah.
You care about that stuff. You know, you have a private life too. And most people don't see that side of stuff.
Yeah. I think that, you know, now more than ever, someone who relates to someone who makes music, they can now not only relate to them on a music front, but now they can relate to them in a life style and in a life aspect because of social media and things like this, which is awesome to me to think that, and I said this earlier on another thing where, you know, I will always find it, I'd be extremely grateful and always find it incredible that someone will have 20 minutes in their car to go to work or go to something. And in that 20-minute span that they have, they'll take the time to type in my name on a phone, hit my song to listen to, and give me those 3 to 20 minutes of music. That is like the most intimate thing in the world for me, is to think that someone would want to
make that
allow you their life and their time and let my music be in their story, you know?
It's a blessing, dude.
Yeah, and then if you can take the extra mile and then allow that person to see more of your own, you know, personal life and things that you're going through and things that are real and all that, they can now connect to you on a different level to understand that everything that you're writing is true, you know?
And that you're human.
Yeah.
It's all relatable.
Yeah, man. Authenticity, baby. That's the only way to go.
I think you're one of those dudes that has that aura about you. From the first time that I met you, it was that way. I don't think there was anything in there that was fake or too trying.
Thanks, man.
You are who you are. And I think that's neat. I love to watch I mean, this whole thing started from Danielle, who was on the Brantley Gilbert cruise.
Yeah.
That was a big, big thing to say right there. And I think that everything happens for a reason again like that. I mean, Brad told me he was afraid to call in that sense. Like, what am I going to get out of this sort of thing? You know, this guy's not going to listen to me. It's Vegas. We've never even played the West Coast. And listening to Brad talk like that. But at the end of the day, that's how all these start.
Did Brad ever tell you the real true story of y'all's first meeting?
No.
So he told you on that phone call after you called him to say, hey, let's like talk about it or whatever.
Right.
He told you on that first phone call that he was coming into town and he had some time, you know, and wanted to sit down. Dude, he was never coming to town.
You're shitting me.
Dead ass. He
came here just for that?
Came here just to do the meeting. And I think that's an awesome story too, like for artists that are looking for someone to manage them or be involved in their career to help them. I will tell you 100,000 times over, if you have a homie that's been riding with you for life, that's what you want to, you know, go for to manage your career and have involved, because no one's going to care more about
that's pretty bad
them than, you know, than them. You know, big name managements, they can do some things and do some deals, but at the end of the day, you're on a counter, you know, like...
I know that he didn't come here just for me. He came here to gamble and eat crab legs.
No, he does that now.
free crab legs.
We've had a few good years of management commissions, you know. Yeah.
So,
trust me, his management commissions sucked in 2020.
pretty funny. I go Sunday. Y'all came over for the Super Bowl, and we were playing a joke on some stuff. You went out to call your wife on the phone, and you were scheduled, if nothing had changed in the game, to win. And I was going to pay you, but I was going to take out Brad's commission because it's technically a work thing.
That's right.
Right. So out of the $100 he was going to win, you were going to get 85 and he was going to get 15, but you didn't win because he was going to take his commission or whatever. It's kind of funny, but I like that story that he flew out here just for that, because that is dedication, man. That's a true belief. I know what's been built at Stoney's. I get a lot of people. Steven wrote me today. My PR girl wrote me today with two different artists. That have reached out to them to get in touch with me to have their artists play there. And I just sit back and I'm like, I get their emails, but I'm not saying that they're not worthy, but I've got 100 of them sitting in there. This year so far, I've gotten at least 100 artists that have wanted to come through. So I kind of put them in a folder and I go through and I listen to their music, and I guess I do that. I do A&R. I'm not just going to book anybody. It's one of those things I have to like, because at the end of the day, I'm at every show.
Yeah.
And I got to want to watch it.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple hiccups, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, and it's honestly, dude, it really is your market and brand that you're building. Essentially, you know, like how radio stations used to do it, where they build and market and find their listeners.
Yeah.
You've done the same thing with Stoney's, you know? So, like, it's not just a place that you're going there to try to flip a buck. It's a place that you're trying to develop taste and a normal experience for them to, like you said, trust to know that when they go and buy a ticket, even if they don't know the artist, they're going to love the artist when they leave.
Yeah, it's going to be our best. We had one girl that came through, actually didn't stay for the show. I don't even care. Her name is Haley Georgia. She played. It was so bad. I was at a Pussifer show at the Palms, and you weren't supposed to have your phone in there, but my watch was going crazy. I think the people that work there three times came up to me and said, one more time, you're out of here. I'm just like, and I looked at my buddy Dave, and I'm like, I have to go. Dude, I have to go. And I watched this video. It was horrible, horrible. And I ran back there and was like, what is going on? Why is this? She was drunk. Bad, dude. It's probably one of, might have to pull this, but probably one of the worst things that I've ever experienced there, like in a sense of an artist getting on stage and just blowing it.
Oh, God.
And it was like, didn't understand it for the life of me.
Yeah.
Didn't understand it because.
When was that?
Pre-COVID. It was a while ago.
Dang. So she was probably super young.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was yelling at people to buy her shots from sitting up on the stage. I think she opened for somebody. I think. I have to go back and maybe that's why I don't do openers, man.
Man. I don't know. You've had some good openers, too.
I'm very particular about those.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny that when Nate Smith just came through, Dylan Snyder was on it, and they reached out and said, we'd like to have an opener on it. We know that you don't like him. And I said, who is it? They said, Dylan Snyder. I went, cool. But it goes back to sometimes they'll say, well, why would you do it for this one and this one? And I'll be like, dude, my audience already knows who that artist is, so it's not a loss.
Yeah.
You know, Avery Anna was one of those where like, they're like, what the hell are you doing? You're putting on a show, but you won't put this artist on a show. I'm like, our audience already dances to them, already knows that music from country AF radio and from our DJ. It's stuff that we already play, but that's also having your finger on the pulse of a club. You know, I already know what they listen to. I already know what they're getting into. I believe I know that. I think that's the passion I have for it.
Yeah, and you slow trickle market into their ears what the vibe is too, which is super smart, man. Seriously.
I get with my DJ and I give her music of stuff that's up and coming, the artist, and I challenge her to do the same thing. As the artists come through and she sees them on the calendar, go find some of their music. It's not hard to go to Spotify and find their number one single.
Yeah.
It's the one with the most streams.
Yeah.
It's that easy. And you put it in front of them on a dance floor. Then they start asking for it, and then you turn around and say, hey, they're playing here March 15th, that sort of thing. Guess what? It's a win. It's always marketing, man. Always marketing.
Hell yeah.
I did have a booking agent call me after a show once, Gold Solo Cup, and he said he's never come across a venue before. I said it. He's never come across a venue before that promotes an artist before, during, and after. And I said, you shouldn't be complaining about it. You should be saying thank you. Because I know I'm just an anomaly when it comes to that. Because a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know any other place that does it.
Yeah. No. It's. I mean, it create, like you said, it creates your listenership to have a familiarity with like who you're bringing in and what you're kind of listening to, what the vibe is, and what you know what the new vibe is. Like you stay current in your discovery too, which is cool.
Alexander Kay said that to me, which I thought was pretty freaking neat, when she said that she's been trying to get in there for 3 years, and she said that she loves the way I program the venue because I'm always on top of what music is current.
Yeah
not necessarily popular, but current.
Yeah, well, I mean, you make some popular picks.
I do. I mean, but sometimes when they're popular, I can't afford them.
Yeah,
that's the other side of it. I mean, I think of like the next shows I have coming. I've got Drew Baldridge. You know who that is. You know Renee Blair?
Yeah.
She's coming.
Yeah, dude. She's waiting the truck. I'm hoping that she'll play that for you.
Is she a writer on that?
Yeah. She was the original singer on the demo.
Are you kidding?
No.
That's going to be good.
Yeah. Y'all doing an interview?
Of course.
You'll have to have her tell you that story.
I want to hear that story. It's good to know. Then I got a kid by the name of Lane Smith. Heard of him?
Yeah.
Like him. He's got this single called Austin that just, they wrote me like 7 times, and then it was like, man. Then I just went and listened to it. I went, holy shit. Then I listened to the rest of his music, and I went, I just happen to have this date, March 1st. You in? They took it. Then I got Tyler Braden, and then Treaty Oak Revival.
Damn.
Dude, I'm excited. I mean, Treaty Oak Underground, not too many people know about them.
Oh, they're starting to blow up, though.
They sold almost 400 tickets already.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, their social media is starting to go crazy.
Huge. And then I'm excited I get to bring back Chancey Williams.
Nice.
And then after that, I don't know if you know this kid, Danny Stevens. Do you know him?
Mm-mm.
Do you remember the band The Audition from back in the day?
Yeah.
Singer.
No shit.
Yeah. And that's a flyer for me. I loved him in The Audition. I listened. They gave me his music direct. I met him from my buddy Brian Russell Collins. He gave me his music, his new album.
Yeah.
Probably like 2 months ago. And I think he just dropped the first single like maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
He's doing country. Oh, man, I'm about to freaking run, not walk, to my Spotify as we're done.
I think he's got 1 or 2 singles off that album. I'll send you the whole thing. He ain't going to get mad at me. Yeah. But, dude, like, I listened to it, and I was like, holy shit, this is cool. It's throwing me back. It's not super country, but it's in the vein.
That's cool.
I like it. But that's what it's all about, man.
Dude, you know? I got to listen to that. That's awesome.
I was when they told me about who he was, I was like, I definitely know that band. Definitely know that band because I was a Warped Tour kid.
Yeah.
You know, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
We learned that yesterday in the Razor.
That's right.
What was your favorite part about yesterday being out in the desert?
Man, honestly, just the experience chilling with you, man, it was favorite.
Fun.
Yeah. I like when you live, you said that you've been riding those trails for like 20 years.
Yeah.
It's cool to be with someone who knows it that well, but is still as excited to go, even after 20 years.
Yeah.
So, like, I felt like I was getting the excited inside treatment on what was cool out there in the desert, you know? So, I just enjoyed it. It was amazing.
We ended up going to the Pioneer, and you had some whiskey.
Yeah. Weller.
Weller. But the Pioneer's in the middle of nowhere. I want to say that it's one of the oldest bars in the state of Nevada.
Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
If you've never been, it's something to definitely
don't
go to.
Don't go. Don't go. It doesn't exist.
You got to get more people out there. Next time it'll be closed, though. Yeah. But I told you, on the weekends, the place is packed. There's a lot of bikers out there, a lot of kids on their four-wheelers, dirt bikes. Like, everything's out there. And they got bands playing. It's a neat vibe, dude. It's a super neat, like, old school. It makes you think back.
Some of the best bourbon selection.
Yeah. When you asked the question of, y'all got bourbon, and what that guy's response.
Said yes.
And you're like, what kind? And
he said all of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
I think that's their thing. Yeah. That bar they had sitting in there, one guy was talking about how Clark Gable was sitting at the end of the bar waiting for something. Like,
yeah. And he had a cigar burn in the bar over there or something.
Pretty neat.
Yeah. It's crazy, dude. The history. And honestly, all those people in there, we were there for a short minute, but they all just had a good vibe.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a neat, it's
plus
a neat
room. I got to get CYPB, which is amazing.
And was that Tinley's first time having that?
No.
Oh, he's had it before,
we
too.
We are snobs now.
Both are snobs.
Yeah, but this is new. This is a newly snob era of our life. Normally on our ride or before, or just when we drink, Tinley would drink straight JMO. And I would drink straight Jack Daniel's 7.
That's right.
And then we started doing backyards and bonfires with some people that drink, you know, a little more fluently. And they started introducing us to some different bourbons. And now we have...
you have a palate.
Yes, we've developed quite the palate.
What's your favorite bourbon? If you were to say, let's go do a drink right now, what would it be?
I'm going to cheat because it honestly is anything Buffalo Trace.
Really?
Which is, yeah. Yeah, they just make the best bourbon from small scale to large scale. And Buffalo Trace, in case you're wondering, also is the one that makes Weller, which makes
there you go. That makes
CYPB,
sense.
CYPB, yeah.
So you need to get sponsored by them. Screw that Blue Valley
oh
company,
my
right?
God. No. No, we never say that.
I mean, because this whole thing is brought to you by Blue Valor.
That's right.
I have photos with you with the original bottle when we had like 5 different flavors and everything like that. I just saw those photos today because I was working on the website and I came across those. I'm like, I can't use those because it's the old bottle we don't use anymore.
Yeah, and that was an old distiller too, right?
It was. Out of Wyoming.
That ended up being a crazy story.
It was a bad story. Bad story. Damn. We don't necessarily want to talk about that.
Jeez,
I'm actually meeting with those folks tomorrow. Not the distillery, but the people that we donate to, IPOF. I have a lunch meeting with them tomorrow.
Heck yeah.
About doing some more fundraising stuff and getting the name out there a little bit more.
Nice.
We went to Reno at the end of last year, and then next month we start in Arizona.
Nice, dude. That's badass. Yeah. I'm super proud of you, man.
I'm excited,
You've
dude.
Been working really, really hard on that thing for
it's a ride.
A minute, and you had to go through some trials and tribulations, boy.
I never thought that at my age I would have to do that again. But
and I don't think I've even gotten to taste the final
the
version.
New.
Yeah, the final version yet. I've yet to have it.
You know what? Tomorrow I have I have that meeting, but it's right next to the distillery. So before you leave Thursday, what I'll do is I will manually do a bottle of the brand new. We're on batch 7. That's how many we've done. So each batch is almost 1,000 bottles.
I'm excited. Yeah,
we're on
batch 7. I got to taste the first one that ended up being the guy that was not fun. The in between is the last one that I tasted.
Right.
And I've never tasted the final, like, this is it. This is Blue Valley.
Well, it's neat because it changes each batch that we do just a little bit because the process involved with it isn't down to a science like Jack Daniel's tastes the same every single time.
Yeah.
We've got a little bit of a change in profile because we use some wood chips and it just never, no wood chips are the same. And so this last one, batch 6, I did a little quick, wasn't happy with it. And I went back in about a month ago and, added a little more life to it. So
well,
batch
if you
7,
ever need a quality control guy,
another one.
I will be there for you, my friend.
I sure
if you
wish
need me to sit there on the line and just take a couple sips. I got you covered, man.
Like Lucy used to do, right? That's probably way before your time.
No, I love Lucy, the one with the chocolates.
Yes.
Yeah, that's iconic.
You do that with whiskey.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Dude, that's pretty funny, man, because that would be bad. That would be really bad. I wish I was bottling right now. I mean, I'm probably going to bottle next week. I'm just waiting on some caps to come in. But it'd be fun. One of these times you're in town, we'll have to set it up for you and come actually work the line with us and put it all together.
I'll do it.
Be a part of it. Something I've always wanted to do with Blue Valor, it came to me with some other folks' input, was to do some sort of a special bottle with people. So one of the next times you come around and you play, I would just do like a Sam Groh bottle, sell them that night.
Ooh.
Not for anything crazy. A signature series sort of thing where it has your name on it. Maybe you bottled it. You did the sort of thing. So that sort of thing. And only do so many of them, sell them for more, and then donate the proceeds, even more money, to IPOF. I think that would be cool as shit.
Let's go. I'm in.
I think it would be fun. You got a good base out here to do that. Yeah. I definitely want to get you some bottles before you go. So maybe I'll put together a case for you tomorrow when I'm there. What time you guys leave Thursday?
Thursday morning early.
So Wednesday afternoon, I'll come find you.
Come on.
We'll figure it out.
Dude, let's go.
Let's end this with what's going on the rest of the year for you. You said earlier that you got some more acoustic stuff, and then you go out full band towards the end of the year.
Yeah, so we're booking dates now, full band in the summer. So it's me and Alex finishing this. We have some spot dates in April that I haven't announced yet, but we're going to do a couple more, so we'll extend the tour just a touch.
You're talking about acoustic?
Yeah, acoustic. Okay. And then I obviously am taking off May because I'm having a son.
When's he due?
May 23rd.
Man, I'm hoping he comes early.
I know.
I hope he comes on the 19th.
Yeah, 19th.
Dude, that, because then I would just say the J stands for my real name.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so taking May off, then we'll probably get back at it middle to end of June and play through August with the band. Then me and Tinley take a couple breaks, a couple weeks of break, and then we're back on Backyards and Bonfires for the rest of the year.
Holy cow.
Yeah, our year's planned every year.
You're going to come back west again towards the end of the year?
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan?
Yeah.
I'll be talking to Brad, is what you're saying.
Yep.
The only deal I have is when we eat dinner with Brad, there's no more, if it says MP, he doesn't, that stands for not for Brad. Okay?
The speed and quickness to which he just sat up in his chair.
So y'all know.
That was baller shit, though.
We went to dinner Saturday night, and he played at North 40, and we got a comp to dinner there. We ended up going to the charcoal room.
Mm-hmm.
Me, you, and Tinley were respectful meal eaters.
Yeah.
And Brad looked at me and said, comped, right? And I went, yeah. And he goes, God, I got these crab legs on here. I wonder how much they are. And the guy came over and said, $125 a pound. Brad looked across the table at me and gave me this kind of like, I'll have that.
Yeah.
So, and the bummer is that me and Tinley had to coerce him into finishing the crab legs because he only ate the good stuff.
It's true.
The good stuff.
Yeah, you were like, get up in the freaking body.
The knuckles, dude.
Yeah, you gotta get in there.
That's where all the flavor's at.
Yeah.
That's right, Brad. We just put you on blast, dude.
That's right. He did. He ate his knuckles.
He did. Yeah. I'm proud of him. He did good. And then we went and stood in front of a poker room for an hour and couldn't get a seat because we were on the waiting list.
Yeah, honestly, you probably did both yourselves a favor.
I still want to try that. I still want to go play poker with Brad.
Brad's good at poker. I'm not.
You're not. Well, you're not. No. You're not good at slots. You're not good at roulette. Clearly.
I'm pretty good at roulette.
Did you win today?
No, I didn't play yet.
Oh, I thought you did. That was last night. My bad.
Yeah, that was that freaking guy, man. I let him get in my head. Honestly, that dealer, he just got in my head and like threw off my chi.
At MGM?
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
It was bad. And he was like, I've been doing this for years. And I'm like, well, it's not working, buddy. I was doing fine until I met you. Like, it was bad. It was bad.
Well, you learn. Don't do that again tonight, okay?
Yeah, no. I'm good.
Do me a favor and tell people how to find you online.
Just Sam Groh Music on everything. So at Sam Groh Music. And it's got to have the blue check mark. I know that we really shouldn't have to be saying this anymore, but it's got to have the blue check mark. If it doesn't have blue check mark, it's not me. It's not me.
And you're not asking for money.
I'm not asking for an Apple gift card. I'm not saying hello, fan, in your DMs. I'm not saying you're such a lovely lady. That's not me. That ain't me.
Let's have some fun real quick. Today, I sent something to Dylan Snyder. So his brother looks really, really, really so much like him. It's not even funny, but maybe about a foot taller, right? Yeah. So I get this friend request on Facebook, and it says Dylan Snyder, and it says brother's picture.
Really?
Yeah. And it's got like 2 followers. I was like, so I sent it to him. I was like, seriously, he goes, it's about as close as you're going to get. Fair enough. Dude, thanks again for the time.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Thanks for having me, bro.